Good morning and welcome back to Community Living Radio here at CFRO 100.5 FM, Vancouver's Co-op Radio. Well, today we're going to play an older interview, but I want to introduce a special friend and my wife's nephew, Dean. He's here in Vancouver visiting and helping me and my wife. Actually, my wife had stomach surgery and she is recovering. And Dean came out and he's been a godsend to help us deal with some stuff around. And so what do you think of Vancouver this visit?
Well, it's been a pleasure being here in Vancouver. It's a modern city compared to the city that I live in. And I'm just overwhelmed by the beauty of the city. It's one of the most beautiful cities in the world. It has been voted by the many different tourist organization as one of the best places to live in the world and to visit. I'm truly blessed to be here, and I just want to thank Michael for inviting me here.
So and I'm glad you were able to come out, especially in our time of need. So with that, we're going to play an older interview with Ann Hoy, the published author. And welcome everyone back to Community Living Radio. I'm here today with published author Ann Hoy, and she wrote the book Pump Up Your Own Tires, Crossing the Bridge to Loving Yourself. And there's a bit of a story here. I met Ann at a book writing seminar, and you already had the book written by the time we got to the seminar, didn't you?
Yes, I published it actually a year ago.
Yeah, and I know you've done a few things here in Surrey, BC to sell a bunch of books too.
That's right. Yeah.
Yeah. And we've become along the way Facebook friends and things like that. So, okay. I know that there's going to be a bit of a story about the first couple questions that I'm going to ask you, and that is how you define self-love and why you need to love yourself. So, why don't you go ahead with that?
Okay. I find that everybody loves themselves deep down inside. When you're a perfect little baby newborn, you love yourself. You cry when you need food. You express your needs. You tell people, I need love and care and attention, because you can't care for yourself. But throughout the years, you know, layers get put on you of, you know, your parents, your teachers, your friends. You're told, don't be selfish, don't do this, don't do that. And you pile up a lot of conditioning from your past, and you carry it with you throughout your life. And most of us are too busy, we're too busy working and, you know, on Facebook or whatever. We don't take the time to sort of examine what's happened and to kind of rethink it or update it until we hit some major point in our life where it's a sort of a crossroads or something, I find. So basically, self-love is looking good to yourself. It's an invisible thing that you look inward and are you happy with you and who you are? And when you start to look at yourself in that way, you start to be aware and to take actions to improve it. If there's some feeling like, I had a feeling of inadequacy and it was a nagging feeling at me, and I had to look inside to, you sort of have to get your mind silent and separate it from your thoughts, because that's the problem. It's your overthinking and adding judgments to things that, you know, makes you not feel good. So it's kind of about working from the inside out, and it's hard work. It's not your reputation to the world. It's your character within yourself. So you can feel power, you can feel, you know, you're clear, you have clarity to know what you want to do. And it's not tied to what you do or what you own, because all those things can be taken away. But you are actually your most precious asset. And you can't be taken away. You are always going to be with yourself. And you are creating your experience based on what you're building internally.
Yeah, you know what? That all kind of makes sense. What's inside of us is what we keep for, shall we say, an eternity, right?
Yes, it is eternal. It's before we're born and after we die. It's our spirit, our soul, you know.
Yeah.
You know how someone dies that's close to you and you still can hear them, you can feel them, you can see them, you know what they would think, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, the essence.
That kind of makes sense. And is that why? Because I know part of your book where you were talking about positive self talk is that part of why we need to keep practicing that positive self talk?
We do, yes. We have more than 10,000 thoughts running through our heads a day. Like, some people, it's more. Some people have obsessive thinking, so it could be 100,000. And if the majority of those are negative, you got to cancel. You got to say no. Like, you got to actually watch your... Like, through meditation or yoga, you can create a space between yourself and your thoughts, like your mind. And you have to say, no, that's not true, and cancel that thought, and even replace it with a positive thought. I have a great life. I am creating my experience. You know, I'm responsible for my happiness. All those things, like whatever area you need to work on, you can find statements that support you. You know, I'm shedding weight. You know, whatever it is that you feel is lacking, right? So
yeah. You know, you sound like a lot of the other positivity coaches and life coaches that we have. Each one of those statements that you said started off, I am.
Yes.
How important is the I am to these things? And does our subconscious recognize something other than I am?
Yes. It's very important what you say to your subconscious mind. I've done some reading on it, and I just recently had a self-hypnosis session with Kirsten Bloomquist, who we met at the publishing course, and she said, you know, really important what you're saying to yourself. So the subconscious mind doesn't recognize don't eat donuts. It just recognizes eat donuts. The way the mind works, it just recognizes the action.
Mm-hmm.
So if you can't say things in a negative way, like, oh, I have to stop gambling or drinking or eating or whatever it is. You can't say the negative side. You have to say, you know, I am happy and fulfilled doing this other thing or what. Like, it's always I am, because you are the source. You are creating your experience.
Right. So in other words, if I was to say... I need to stop eating chocolate chip cookies, I'm actually telling my subconscious that I want to eat more chocolate chip cookies. Is it really that simple?
It's really that simple. Like, I've read lots of books about the science of it. You are putting attention onto eating chocolate chip cookies. So by saying don't, it's just like when you... I learned this about child raising. I read a bunch of books, and it said... Don't say, don't be a bad boy. Say, you know, behave appropriately, or like some positive comment is, you know, the right way. It's like programming, because we don't realize it every day. We're programming ourselves. Right. And we're using what our parents used or our teachers, or, you know, a lot of times if we don't look at it and examine it, we're just continuing on from when we were 8 years old.
Wow. So some of the things that we, for example, my mother always used to say to me, is like, she would say, Michael, be a gentleman.
That's so good.
Yeah. And conversely, my sister would stop. I remember her saying this to her kids, that stop being bad.
Yeah, no, that's because also what you're doing there is if you look at that, you're saying you are bad. And really, all you're looking at is the behavior that's bad. The child is never bad.
Right.
You know, the child is wonderful, just like when they were newborn. They are, you know, you're guiding them on a path.
Mm-hmm.
So I would always say, yeah, that's not appropriate behavior. Like, you're great, but you're just, you know, you've gotten off the track here a little bit, you know, because you can't ever say, you know, you're a bad girl or whatever, because it just gets into their dialogue. That's what they say about themselves.
Right. So, in I guess in this situation, in order to keep their self-talk on the positive side, we always need to reinforce their talk with positive affirmations. Is that right?
Yes, exactly. Yeah. So, it's really important who you associate with, even as an adult, for that reason, what the talk is,
So, okay, that leads me to another question, because you pretty well backed up why we need to do the self-positive talk and that including the I am statements. But we all have parenting in our past.
Yes, we do.
Can that and other points in our past actually be holding us back?
Oh, definitely, yes. I mean, our parents did the best they could. They loved us, and they did their best. And we can't blame anybody, because if they didn't look at their past conditioning, then they just, you know, it just goes on in a cycle and on and on.
Mm-hmm.
But what I found was I was older when I had my first child. I was 30. So I started looking at my parenting at that time and thought, I don't want to repeat some of those patterns. So I just went to the library and took out a bunch of books on parenting, and I found common themes, and I just realized that you can actually reparent yourself. You can't change what happened, but you can find the tools for parenting and reparent yourself in ways like we discussed about focus on the behavior, not the child. It just, the inner work in whatever area, like I say, you have a challenge with, everybody's different, but it just, what it does is just makes you stronger. Those neurotransmitters in our brain, when you fire in a habitual way on a certain path, whether it's good or bad, you strengthen that path in your brain. And so when you're doing a positive thing and then do more, it just keeps making more good pathways that support you and are positive.
Mm-hmm.
So the things that I would focus on for my kids, I started focusing on for myself. And the past is done, you can't change it, and you have to kind of get beyond it and say, that was then, this is now, and I can update my thinking and reinvent myself to a new future.
Right. It's kind of funny. Everybody, so I guess maybe it's because we're in the computer age, but I like how you said update, like we're programming ourselves, right?
Yes. Yes, so. Exactly. We don't, it's unconscious. We don't even know it,
Mm-hmm.
It would be too hard to, look at everything that we're thinking. But even if you start slowly, what I started doing was sitting in a chair for 5 minutes. I couldn't sit down and stop. I was always doing stuff. And I'd sit down for 5 minutes and just feel this clarity and like, oh, I know what I have to do. And, so then it became 20 minutes, and then, various activities. If you do things that make you feel good, suddenly your thoughts start sorting itself out,
Right. Yeah. So when we do something positive, how do we keep the focus on what we did was positive and stop our brain from wanting to creep up with the negative stuff that we do? You said we have 10,000 thoughts a day.
Yeah.
So how do we work on that?
Okay, so what you do is you find a way to find out what is important to you, mm-hmm. and you prioritize it for your life. And, I mean, the simplest way is to write down a list of 30 and then look at the top five, like star the top five things on that list that are most important to you, your family, your finances, your career, your, you know, traveling, like whatever it is, everybody's different. And then what you do is start funneling the thoughts into nurturing those areas, because we're all being drained by things that aren't nurturing us. And we feel selfish saying no, or we just don't focus enough to know what we want. Mm-hmm. So once you get the clarity, then it all starts falling into place.
Okay. So we get clear on what we want, and after we get clear on what we want, and we just keep repeating it.
You do more of what you love. Your motto is to do more of what you love in your mm-hmm. life, because your purpose in life is to evolve, expand, and find out what you love, and then share your gifts, because that gives you the most meaningful life possible. And it also helps others when you're doing what the best thing that's serving yourself and others. It provides an example, and it provides help to others. You have energy to spare when your energy is clear.
Wow. That kind of makes sense. Then you can help others along with their path, of course.
Exactly. Yeah. Once your cup's overflowing, then you know you have extra. But you have to protect your energy, because there's people that will actually deliberately try and take your energy and use it badly. And you know, I mean, and there's people that unconsciously will do it. They're not mm-hmm. even aware. You know, that's just what they do. And sometimes we don't realize we have a choice in what we're doing. We think that, oh, I have to do this, I'm duty bound to this, and I'm responsible. But we're responsible to ourselves first.
Right. That's something that that I learned as a parent, that I had to take care of me first, and then I can take care of everyone else. So Kelly's given us a signal to go to the break. And well, Kelly, it's all yours, and we'll continue the conversation with Anne when we get back. And we're back. You're listening to Community Living Radio, and I'm Michael. And Dean, so what do you think of the interview so far?
I'm really enjoying this interview. It's quite educational, and it's very positive. It's a very positive educational presentation by her.
Okay.
Really enjoying it. Thanks, Michael.
Yeah, so let's get back to the interview. We're back here with Anne Hoy, and she is the author of Pump Up Your Own Tires, Crossing the Bridge to Loving Yourself. And some of the things that you were talking about, especially with dealing things with your past and stuff like that, it's like, so we have like pain in a painful memory or a painful event that happened in our past. So how do we learn to deal with that pain, and how do we find the lesson that is hidden inside of it?
Okay. It's, you know, different for every person. I mean, if there's been severe trauma, probably, you know, they need to seek therapy and and get help. This is for the people that, you know, have managed to sort of cope fairly well and are just looking for more growth. You know, it's not saying people shouldn't go see a doctor, but I'm a big fan of Tony Robbins, and what he says is depression's on the rise, and antidepressants aren't curing the problem. They give a bit of relief temporarily, but really there's a deeper problem, you know, at force, and it's really only when you start looking at that. So the pain, you have to decide that that pain's not going to keep you stuck. You have to make a decision, because you are bigger than your pain. You are bigger than your problems. You are made from divine energy, so you are stronger than anything that can tear you down. Life doesn't get easier. It's not that nobody ever gets it all figured out. We get stronger by working on our characters, working on our inner selves and our conditioning. So we tend to get beyond the past, and we create a new identity, basically, for the future, and believe that greater things are in store for us. Yeah, and we're all going to slip backwards into feeling horrible again, but then it gets easier to pick yourself up, and it gets shorter the time that you're going to spend feeling anxiety or depression or whatever. But you'll never go back to where you were. You're always evolving to,
right,
get away from the pain. So, and pain is useful too. You can learn a lot of lessons. It does a lot of good for you if you know, it's part of your wholeness as a human being. It's part of your experience that has shaped you. So you wouldn't want to not have the pain, because that has created part of you too. It's what makes you unique. So you run away from it, you escape it, you get a new identity, but ultimately you have to sort of be with it and face it too and feel it and have compassion for yourself.
Mm-hmm. Is that something that it is something that we have trouble with in our society, is having compassion for ourselves, that a lot of times aren't we taught that, like, for instance, I grew up Roman Catholic. It's like, hey, you are guilty, you will be guilty, and the reason why you're guilty is because you're evil.
You're a sinner. Like, I grew up Catholic too, indoctrinated Catholic. Yeah.
Yeah.
You better go to confession. You didn't eat all your dinner. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, that same. It's a heavy load of conditioning, that one, you know.
Yeah.
And I mean, a lot of good comes from it too. There's a lot of discipline and there's a lot of goodness, but yeah, the guilt is just overwhelming.
Yeah. So of course they teach us that, no, God put that pain there because you're supposed to stay that way, and
you're supposed to sacrifice yourself.
Right.
Yeah.
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 You know, how do we, sacrifice isn't necessarily a bad thing. No. I'm not saying that. But how do we balance that? So that we don't harm ourselves, but at the same time that we're continuing our learning process and moving forward.
Okay, that's a good question, because that's the heart of the matter. It's your focus has to be on how you overcame your circumstances, not what your circumstances were.
That makes sense.
So how did you, you know, reinvent yourself, your new vision? Mm-hmm. Because otherwise your bad circumstances when you were a child and you really had no power are defining you for the rest of your life.
Okay, and that's, I can see that being a big hold back right mm-hmm. there, right?
So, yes.
Okay, so for example, how did and go from where you were to being the successful writer, author that you are?
Well, I just stopped being afraid to fail. Like, the fear of, fear is why you don't love yourself in the first place. You're saying all these things internally. But I just felt like I had helped myself and that I could help other people that were in my situation. And I got it from the gifts of all these authors for free at the library. So it didn't take a lot of money. It didn't take, it just took effort. It took the willingness to look at the pain and do the work and realize that I am responsible. So I created my experience as an adult, and that I have a responsibility to look at myself too if I want to expand and grow. And there was no lack of love. The world is abundant with love. And you fear showing yourself to others, like, this is the real me. Am I going to be accepted? And you got to stop worrying about other people's approval and worry about your own approval a lot more. Because loving yourself is approving of yourself. And it still hurts when other people don't approve of you or judge you, but it can't stop you from doing what your purpose is or what you love.
That's really interesting. Okay, so loving yourself is about approving of yourself. It isn't an ego thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the ego is pride. The ego is like, oh, I'm the, president of such and such. But, like, that's pride. That's saying, I feel inadequate, but this external thing makes me feel better. And then there's nothing wrong with achieving and being the president. But when it's a prideful thing, and when that's the first thing that you say about yourself, if you have to describe yourself, you would say, I am, perspective, I'm outgoing, you'd have a lot of qualities, but you wouldn't say, oh, I'm, this or that or the other thing, because sometimes that is bolstering up something that you're lacking inside.
Okay. Well, okay. So okay. This brings up a whole, because I know there's a bunch of guys that are actually listening out there too.
A lot of ladies
are listening, but for you guys who are listening, I'm gonna ask this question, because the male perspective is, I am what I do.
Exactly. Yes. You are a human being first. You are not a human doing first. That's how we get it wrong sometimes. And a lot of times what people do isn't really what they want to do. It's based on past programming, conditioning. Like, I used to tutor kids, and I'd have the brightest kids ever come in and go, I want to be a plastic surgeon, but my mom says I have to be a dentist, and it was just funny, like, at the age of 9 and 10, they were already being funneled into a program, and they didn't want to do it, mm-hmm. But it would get approval of their mom, their family, their society, but it wasn't what they wanted to do.
Yeah, well, I remember that from when I was growing up, and I was determined with my own kids that, hey, I wanted them to do what they wanted to do. I don't know how effective I was at that, but I guess I had to ask my kids, right? But from when I was growing up, right? Then this is something that's always kind of stuck with me and been the driving thing to me accepting what it is that my kids want to do versus what I want them to do, and. Yeah. My parents got upset with me because my mother volunteered at the school I went to as one of the art teachers.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't enter the art contest because I had no interest in art.
Right.
Right. So
I didn't enter. My art was actually music.
Okay.
Well, and I sung. I was in the school band and all that kind of stuff, right? So,
right.
And we had a pretty successful concert band. But when I got home that day, because my mother didn't see an entry form for me for being in this art thing. Oh boy, did I get heck for that, right?
Yeah.
So, I didn't. As a child, I always wanted to have approval from my parents, but mm-hmm. I looked at them both and I said, "But I'm not interested in that."
Yes. So some people are just born with that confidence. Mm-hmm. We're all at different levels. Like there's kids that are just born with, you know, the self-belief, and that's great. You know, like probably about 10% or 20% of people are born that way, and they don't get what I'm talking about because it's never been a challenge for them.
Yeah. So how do you, as a parent, how do you not... how do you keep that kid so that he or she keeps that self-confidence, right? How do you teach him how to keep it?
That's right. Yeah,
because you don't want him to throw it away. You want them to keep it, right?
Yeah, that's right. So as a parent, a general rule is, like, if you're going to say something negative, you got to say 5 positive things to counteract it. And that's the same rule with yourself. If you say something bad about yourself or a marriage or any relationship that you have, whether it's yourself or someone else, so you got to watch, you know, the complaining and the negativity, because that's what ruins things. You really have to have an overabundance of positive, because everybody's struggling with so much pain that you don't even know about. And really that's, you know, with kids, yeah, they need encouragement for whatever skills, if they're mechanical or whatever it is, because, you know, they can change the world if they're not blocked with their past, because mm-hmm. what I found was I was always criticized for being, you know, oh, don't be an artist, you know, go into sciences or whatever, and so I always suppressed it. So then I'm 50 years old and starting to blog and write finally after all those years. I dabbled in it, but I wanted to be a writer since I was 6 years old. And I was told, no, go work in a bank, go be an accountant, go. So I did. And you can't suppress it. Like, it never works, manipulation. It always blows up after. So.
Yeah. Yeah, that was another area of my I guess I was a bit of a rabble razzle on this one.
Oh, yeah.
Because my parents they encouraged me to take math.
Yes.
But they discouraged me from taking science. And I remember at one point that I was taking an advanced math course that that had it was advanced math course, but instead of calculus, like for business people, where it was just simple XYZ kind of differentiations, it was the cosine of X minus the tangent of X kind of differentiations.
So, like a calculus.
Yeah.
You were in
the
calculus.
Yeah, I was already in the calculus.
High end, yeah.
Yeah. And my parents looked at me and said, "You know, kid, you're on your own. It's like you struck in a direction that we can't help you." And
no.
They were trying to discourage me from going that way.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't good luck, you know, we're behind you sort of thing. It was so I'm imagining that they were acting out of fear because they can no longer help me. So
yeah,
how do we get around the fear so that we can keep helping people?
Yes, the fear of the unknown, right?
Yeah.
What we don't understand. So how we get beyond the fear is, first of all, by looking at it, because a lot of times anxiety is fear. When someone's feeling anxious, they have to get to the bottom of what they're actually fearing. Like, I have a little bit of a fear of computers, like learning how to, you know, snapshot a tweet or things like that. Oh, I have to go to Letbox, and I feel stressed out that I can't do it. So it's a sure sign I'm afraid that I'm going to, you know, crash this computer, and which isn't going to happen. Most fears are irrational.
Mm-hmm.
They're keeping us stuck where we are for some odd reason. And, you know, the best thing to do is to ask for help. And usually it's something very easily solved. But our thoughts make the fear blow up into some kind of a monster in our heads.
Right.
Yeah.
That makes perfect sense. And Kelly's saying that we got to get to another break. But when we come back, our next question is about how we can strengthen our mind. So okay. So when we come back, we'll get to how we can strengthen our mind. Okay. So go ahead. And we're back again. You've been listening to Community Living Radio. I'm Michael, and our station. You've been listening to a rebroadcast of Anne Hoy. She's a published author, and she's an expert in mindset and helping people grow forward through using mindset work and NLP. Meditations and things. So we're gonna zip back to the interview, and this will be the final segment, and we'll move forward into other programming.
So thanks, Kelly, and we're back here with Anne Hoy, the author of Pump Up Your Own Tires, and she's teaching us how to love ourselves and why it's so important for us to love ourselves. So when we went to the break, I put the question out, said I would ask this question. How does feeling good strengthen your mind, and how do we like keep our mind strong?
Okay, so the most important way to strengthen your mind, it sounds kind of trite, but is to feel grateful. When you're grateful for the good experiences that you've had and you're having and the good people that have come into your life, you make a habit of attracting more good to you. So you strengthen, like this, you can read a ton of science about strengthening the pathways in your brain. And a lot of times they kind of die off when we don't use them, when we get stuck in our rut and do the same thing and go to the same place every day and sit in the same chair. And, you know, we close off our minds and we don't expand. But when you feel grateful, you're just being thankful for everything. And then what you notice is your gratitude swells inside of you. And then all of a sudden you're smiling, you're complimenting, you're searching for, you know, ways to feel better with people that make you feel better. And you're having compassion for yourself, and you're also having compassion for them. So thinking about good things rather than bad things is a great way to strengthen your mind. And like I say, anything that you can make into a habit, you just creates a lot of power.
Mm-hmm. Very cool. So creating habits actually helps strengthen our mind.
Yes, like when I wake up in the morning, I say, I'm grateful for my dad, I'm grateful for my dog. Like, I just have a mm-hmm. list, I look around me, and I start the day with what I'm grateful for.
Right. So it sounds like a really good habit to have is the habit of being grateful.
Yes, it's super important, because a lot of us, we get addicted to our problems.
Mm-hmm.
And we rant about them and we complain and we focus on them. So we're getting more problems when we do that. And when we focus on gratitude, we're getting more things to be grateful for. it's just the attraction, the way the energy works.
Right.
You're just receptive to more good things.
Oh. Well, why does that sound like overly simplistic, though? Wait, you did say that.
It does. It sounds Pollyanna. I know. People say I'm woo-woo and I'm this or I'm that, but I've proven that it works in my within myself. This is an invisible thing that, you know, we like to measure. We like to have visible results and tangible, you know. That's our society is that way. We only believe in what we can see, but there's far more unseen in our world than what we can see. And there's a lot of, you know, we are all energy, and our energy can, you know, be used for good or bad, and it can be drained or it can be increased, you know.
Right. So, since we are in the age where like science says we gotta track things and track our results and all that kind of stuff. I know people are thinking that, okay, so if I'm grateful, how do I track what I'm grateful for, and how do I track what the result is? What the positive result is by me doing this, or my successes?
Yes. Well, you earn what you get, but there's a certain way of attracting it to you, because what you're doing is, when you're complaining about things, is it's just the way the energy goes, is you're focusing on that, so you're never going to get what you want when all you can do is think about what you don't want. It's just the way it works. With gratitude, you already feel like you have everything, so you become a force. You have faith that everything that you need is coming your way, and the future is bright, because you have everything you need. You're not wanting or lacking or disgruntled with what you have.
Okay. That kind of makes sense. So, there's a lot of stuff out there talking about journaling, which admittedly, I'm not the best journaler, and I always I actually have a coach who make sure that I journal every day. She calls me and says, "Did you journal your stuff today?"
Yeah, that's a great practice. Yeah,
that's a great practice for people? Is you would suggest that to people to journal everything that they're grateful for?
Yes, I would say what I used to do. I don't know if you are familiar with Julia Cameron, The Artist's Way.
Yes,
it's a phenomenal book. Yes. And she talks about being an artist herself. She's written a lot of screenplays. She's written 25 books or something. And she said, do morning pages. So every morning you wake up and you commit 20 or 30 minutes. You don't get dressed. You don't brush your teeth. You don't do anything. You sit at the table and do morning pages religiously. And you're not allowed to read them, and nobody else is allowed to read them. So I did it every morning for about 4 months straight. And then she said, like, after a few months, go back and see your morning pages. So when I looked at them, I had booklets. I had, like, 10 booklets filled up. Yeah, it doesn't take long once you just start spitting it out. And then once you go look back, you'll have recurring themes in your morning pages of the things in your life that you need to look at. They just come out of you when your critic isn't awake yet. That's how she describes it. Because we all have this huge inner critic saying, oh, no, you're not. Oh, no, you don't. And when you get up fresh, first thing in the morning, you're just in a state of, you know, still almost sleepy. It comes out what you need to work on and what you're grateful for, everything. It's just out.
Yeah.
You know.
So that starts to change how we see ourselves, how we identify with ourselves also?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, because you go, oh, I didn't know that was, you know, I was thinking about that problem so much, or that this was such a great joy in my life, or because it's your thoughts visible on paper, because you're unfiltered when you first roll out of bed in the morning. That's your most calm, peaceful state, mm-hmm. where you haven't let all the, you know, I got to make a coffee or whatever thoughts aren't there yet. You just make a decision to make this a pattern. And I found it really helpful for it being introspective.
Wow. So, there was one thing that you were talking about, and I wanted, you probably already touched on this some, but let's make sure that we actually have this. Why do we have to update our identity?
Okay, yeah, I've touched on it from the, you know, example of the subconscious mind. Mm-hmm. So you got to examine your subconscious mind. Now that sounds like crazy, but any kind of like morning pages help, or journaling, like you say, mm-hmm. Meditation, anytime when you can separate yourself from your obsessive thinking, because they say it's not what happens to us, it's what we think about what happens to us. So, you know, the stuff that happens to us, we have added our own perceptions to everything. And so it's how we react or we respond to things. So if we can detach ourselves from that, we gain a great understanding and an inner wisdom. And then we can say, you know, I never wanted to be an artist, but I always wanted to be a musician. And look at you, now you're doing performance, you're doing radio, you're doing right. Facebook Lives, you're doing what you initially wanted to do. I don't know if you still play an instrument, but it never goes away. So what you did was said, you know, no, I'm not going to, you know, do what my parents wished I would do, but I'm going to do what I really want to do.
Yeah, they even now I tell my mother that I'm really succeeding in entertainment, and she's like, "Well, one day you'll move back home again and you'll get a real job."
That's right. Yeah, you don't have a job. You're probably working 24/7 on what you're doing, but it's, you know, when are you going to get a job? People don't they don't think it's because of fear. They don't believe you can work in your passion, like. But the most successful people, you know, the Steve Jobs of the world, that's exactly what they're doing. They're the artists that, you know, are inventing and visualizing, you know, the next thing that's coming.
I mean, let's look at some of the most successful people and how passionate they are about what they do. In entertainment, two of my heroes for sticking to their guns and doing what they knew they could do was I can't think of the one guy's name, his last name, I remember is Rowan, but he played Mr. Bean, right?
Oh yeah,
he was told he was too ugly, he was too this, he was too that to be in entertainment, right? Yeah. And
so funny.
Yeah. And how successful was he as with that one particular character? I don't usually measure, because I don't measure my own success in dollars and cents. I measure my success in number of people I touched. How many people, when you say Mr. Bean, they bam, how many people know exactly who I'm talking about, right?
Mm-hmm.
The other is Sylvester Stallone.
Oh yeah.
When I say Sylvester Stallone, everybody has an image of Rocky running up the stairs.
Yeah.
So how many people has that movie actually touched? How many people has he inspired? You know.
Oh yeah.
It's not about how much money, but they stuck to their passion, right? So it was really important that you just said that. So sticking to our passions, it's really a really good thing to do. I guess with success is like we have to prioritize our activities so that we stay within So that we're doing what we know we need to do, right?
Mm-hmm.
Why is it so important? Sorry.
Well, you have to say yes to everything that happens, because that means you're accepting what is. A lot of times we argue with, you know, oh, why is this and why is that? Why is my car breaking? You know, and we're asking the wrong questions. We just need to fix the car. There's much more important things going on, but we get bogged down by, you know, the little things, right? So what we have to do is say no to the things that we don't want to do, because your passion, it consumes a lot of your energy.
Mm-hmm.
And that's good, but if that's your one main thing, and you have to put it at the top, then you can have everything, but not all at once, is what they say. So
mm-hmm.
you have to focus on, you know, getting your passion right. So it's, you know, you have done the work. Like it's basically hard work and learning and growing. But you are always improving. Like you accept things as they are, but you always are working and improving on yourself, because that's what people are. They're evolving beings. They're not static where they stay the same. Some people, they figure, you know, they graduate high school and they learned everything and they know everything and their whole life is based on that knowledge.
Mm-hmm.
And then they don't feel satisfied. They don't kind of have a self-awareness. They don't realize that they need to kind of dig down in themselves a little bit to find the answer. So, so then the people that love and inspire and support you are the people that you should be associating with.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's, you become who you know, the average of the five people you associate with. So, you really need a supportive environment, especially when you're working so hard.
Right. So I always like people ask me about this, and I say just avoid the naysayers.
Yeah. That's right.
You don't need
avoid
them.
Run. Yeah.
Yeah, avoid the naysayers.
Avoid the naysayers. They're not helping.
Yeah. Yeah. Things are winding down for us. Kelly's giving me some other signals. We got, I think, maybe about 5 minutes left. So, what is one key piece of information that people should just have to help them moving forward to real self-love, not the ego self-love, but the real self-love?
Just that you are perfect as you are. Like, all your answers and everything you need is actually within yourself, but you have not been paying attention to your intuition for a lot of years, like I wasn't. Your intuition, like that gut feeling about things,
mm-hmm.
that is totally 100% accurate for yourself. And we will never know what's in anybody else's mind. We can barely even, you know, examine what's in our own mind, and we make a lot of assumptions about what other people are thinking or doing or whatever. But really, everything that we need for ourselves is within us. And when something seems to insult what's in our soul, then we need to get rid of it, or, you know, eliminate it, or reduce it or something. Whether it's an activity or a person, or it's okay to walk away and to feel good, because that's what you need to be strong for your life.
Right. So, okay. It's been really, really great having you on the show today. But
Thank you.
Do people get a hold of you if they want to work with you or get more information about how to find your book and all that kind of stuff?
Okay, well, I'm currently working on a workshop to teach based on my book, and the date and times are going to be announced. I think the initial one's going to be held out in Maple Ridge. But I have a website and a Facebook site called annhoy.com,
mm-hmm.
and I'm going to be posting updates on there. And my book is for sale at the Gypsy Moon Store in Cloverdale on the historic Main Street on 176. I did the book signing there a few weeks ago. As you know, you came and did a Facebook Live there.
Yeah, we had a lot of fun with that. I met your son, too, right?
Thanks so much. Yeah, it was really great. Just met a lot of people and talked to them. And, so that it's for sale there. And it's in the Surrey Public Library. I'm not sure if it's been classified yet. They said it takes a few months, so they're working on it. And it's on Amazon. And, so I'm just... and I'm working on another book. It'll be out, within 6 months or so. At this point, I'm just going to be doing the workshops. If people find this information useful, you can delve deeper into it there.
Wow. Okay. Well, thanks a lot, Anne. You have an awesome day. And, hopefully we will get more information and get that up about your workshops and everything, and talk to you later.
Thank you so much, Michael. I appreciate this balanced living concept that you're doing. I think, people really need this kind of stuff in their life. So it's really great what you're doing. And thanks so much. Have a great day.
Thank you. Okay.
Bye-bye.
Bye.